The Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time.
The Antioch Podcast.
The Antioch Podcast is a ministry of Preach System. Oh,
I got Jesus, yay.
Hello, welcome to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. The Antioch Podcast takes its name from the ancient city of Antioch, the first multi-ethnic church mentioned in the Bible in Acts 11. Because they had no single ethnic identifier, Romans who mocked followers of the way in Antioch called them little Christs or Christians. A name which those early believers soon adopted as a badge of pride. Because of Antioch's location on what became known as the Silk Road, Christians in Antioch were instrumental in spreading Christianity throughout the world for centuries. Our podcast is hosted by a multicultural team of Christian anti-racism educators and friends, and biblical anti-racism is the starting point of all our conversations. Let's go now and listen to today's conversation. Hello. Today on the Antioch Podcast, we're going to be talking about what is the future of intercultural ministry as a possible answer for today's church. Here today to talk about this are members of our multi-ethnic team. Now, representation matters in conversations about biblical anti-racism, so let's go around a moment and give our name and our racial or ethnic identifier before jumping in to discuss today's topic. I'll go first. My name's Eric. I identify as a white man.
And I am Michelle, and I identify as an African-American woman.
I'm Reggie, and I identify as an African-American male.
I'm Hannah, and I identify as a white woman.
So today's topic again, what is the future of intercultural ministry is a possible answer for today's church. And I'd just like to open up with this question. What has been the history of intercultural ministry in the church?
Well, let me give a little history about intercultural ministry. And it's not something that's been done for years, at least in the 20th century, but it's been particularly coming now that a lot of white churches are finding themselves in transitional neighborhoods where new communities are coming and now having to ask that question, who can come to their church? And are they even set up for those new immigrants who are coming? And what I found is, particularly in my own denomination, is that a lot of those churches have now found themselves where the white former members have moved out, and now those different communities have moved in, whether it's especially from the global south and also from Southeast Asia and also from Africa. And so this has really changed the trajectory of how those churches are now thinking about what is God's answer in terms of the future for their particular churches. We all know that it is okay to have different churches meeting in the same building. And I'm going to call that multicultural churches. Multicultural churches are just different communities who occupy the same building, but they have no relationship with one another. And what we're calling intercultural ministry is when both those communities intentionally try to build bridges towards one another. And what happens is that they turn into a third way church that becomes even new for both those communities. And we've noticed that, at least in my denomination, and I'm sure in other denominations is also happening, as white churches are beginning to close, these new communities are now asking, can we come in? And how does that change the dynamic of what it means to be the people of God as depicted in Revelation 7:9? I think that's going to be not only a challenge, but it could also be a blessing if those churches or members are willing, as Jesus said, to die to themselves and to be open to the new way in which the Holy Spirit is showing up. That is going to be a great way to kind of segue as, and as some scholars and some missiologists are saying, this is possibly the new way in which, in terms of the American landscape, that churches that were now scrambling for people are now finding people are coming, but they're not exactly the people we were looking for, and now have to make some adjustments to say, is this the work of the Spirit, or are we going to block or resist the Spirit?
Reggie, you know, there's, so when I hear that, and I like your distinction between a multicultural church, which is different cultural, especially international populations or immigrant populations that are coming in and sharing space, right? Maybe maybe the immigrant church is meeting in the basement, or they're meeting in the out in the education center or the gym or something, you know, either at the same time or right before or right after. That's different from an intercultural church where people are intentionally occupying the same worship space and they're trying to find that third way. To be fully transparent, I have resisted being a part of an intercultural or multicultural church for years. I am a part of one now, very much involved, love where I am, but I resisted for years. And the reason I resisted is because I don't need, as an African-American woman, I don't need to be the picture that's on the website to say, look, we got people of color here. You can come here. You can be safe. Or the people of color aren't the real leaders in the congregation, right? It's the white people. And it still feels like a very white space. Yep. And it seems like we're not going to talk about racism. We're definitely not going to talk about, you know, that cold, hard water, you know, and what's that, what it's doing to our community. We're not going to talk about that because really what we're all about is just, let's develop our own personal relationship with God, right? It's a very personal kind of pietistic kind of thing. So I, to be fully transparent, I just get a little like, okay, what kind of intercultural church is this? And is it safer within the American church for immigrants to come in than, you know, the marginalized people who are already here in the United States, right?
Right.
A whole lot easier to welcome somebody from any of the countries in the continent of Africa. Oh, that's so cool. But what, you want from inner city Detroit? I don't know. I don't know about you. So that's the, I appreciate it, but I also know that this is a part of the longer journey of what it means. And I do believe this is going to be the future of the church. It's what heaven, I believe, is going to look like, right? We're just not doing a really good job of practicing for heaven right now. And in this current political climate, that just adds another, let's throw another log on the fire or another log to build up this wall because we haven't dealt with, the church hasn't been known to do a good job with systemic issues.
What?
So
the church hasn't done that well?
No.
You're right.
So I don't necessarily see this great awakening in the church about let's address these systemic issues. What I see is, oh shoot, we got to pay for this building. Well, you know what? let's welcome the foreigner. Yeah, okay. But be quiet for a while because we can't understand what you're saying. So I know that's not the case. So before y'all start writing, I know that is not the case of every church. And I can't even name a church that there's not a church I would want to name right now that I think is doing something. But I can say what it has felt like being a person of color that is sometimes invited into these spaces and what that right. expectation feels like. If the only thing right. I'm seeing on the walls that celebrate diversity are the missionaries that you've been sending to Southeast Asia and the continent of Africa, and it's the people being helped.
Right.
Yeah. That's makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yep.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of times there are these implied power dynamics. It's very understood who's got power.
Right.
From things like, well, where do you get to have your worship service? Mm-hmm. To if you're going to do it together, are there certain kind of like unquestioned ideas about worship that now are being questioned? And I can articulate a few. And I'll give my own context. Early in my history of being a worship leader, I was one of two white people on a primarily Black gospel worship team in a predominantly white multi-ethnic church. And the leaders said, the purpose for our worship team is to be able to give people who aren't dominant in the congregation a sense of being at home. And the way that we would try to embody that would be that if a song was intended to be sung loud, that we actually sang it loud. And if it was supposed to be something that is repeated with the idea that like we keep singing a phrase or a chorus over and over and over until it kind of brings people to kind of like emotional express things like maybe shouting or screaming or like walking around, clapping or, you know, having some kind of ecstatic expression. Nobody would say, don't sing gospel music here. What they'd say is, why do the songs have to be so long? I can't hear when you're so loud. Like, I can't hear what you're saying, right? It's coded. And if you keep getting messages like that, no one's saying you are unwelcome here. It's just that you are running into a regular form of kind of like low-grade resistance all the time.
Right.
Which causes you to question in many ways, like, is this welcome here? Whose rules dictate how things are done?
You got 50 minutes. You got 15 minutes for the whole thing.
Time.
And when you get that time sheet that you got, you know, a minute and a half for the community prayer and 3 minutes for the first song, you can't sing a Hezekiah Walker song in 3 minutes. I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, and that's part of the tension and the challenge that happens when different people come together and they bring who they are. I've heard it said that you're supposed to be at home and at the same time not be at home. And it's trying to figure out what that balance is. And you're never going to attain this, you know, perfect balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard stories of Nigerians coming to this one white church in Canada, and they noticed that the Nigerians were using a whole lot of creamer, whereas the white Dutch, they didn't use it. And they noticed that their bill was going up for creamer. And it became a huge thing where the leaders of the church, the white leaders came, why are you guys using so much creamer? And the Nigerians would say, that's how we do it in our country. And they had to figure out, or just buy more creamer. Just buy more creamer. That's all you got to do. It's a small thing, but it introduces this really intentionalness that needs to happen in order to be an intercultural church that, you know, your church never had a debate about. It was always on autopilot of what we've done. We've got a routine. We know what our liturgy is. We know how things operate. And now we're introducing this really shocking change that really gets at, who are we? Whose place is this? And should the Holy Spirit be nudging us outside of our comfort zone?
Yeah. I've always said, if we're doing this work of diversity right, then everybody should experience some amount of discomfort at some time. Mm-hmm. It should never just be the outsider that's coming in. They're the one that has to do the work to fit in. They're the ones that are always being questioned. They're the ones that are always left to wonder, right? And to make the case. If we're doing this work right, everybody needs to feel a little bit of discomfort at some place. And out of this kind of express discomfort together, not to say, hey, nope, we're going the wrong way. No, let's figure out what this is. Is there anything that we can adjust? And maybe that's just going to be the new normal for a while. Let's understand what this is. Let's lean into it. And I'm good with being uncomfortable sometime, if I know someone else can be uncomfortable. So because I learn more about having a prayer already typed out and just read than just spontaneous. Hey, I'm going to get up and pray and let me look at my phone to make sure I don't go too long. Right. I learned from both.
Well, I'm curious, in all of your experiences, what questions of hospitality are challenged by culture, especially in these kind of settings?
Oh, everything. Everything is challenged. Everything is challenged. It could be, I know one story where an African woman left her children at her church, who knew her. They knew her children. But it was during a children's ministry program, and she just left them. And the white people freaked out. Like, where's the mother? She had went shopping. She went shopping, and she was gone for 2 hours. And folk were thinking, should we call the police? Should we call social services? She showed back up in 2 hours, and the white folk were just, why did you leave your children? How could you do such a thing? And she said back to them, I felt that my children were in the safest place they could ever be. Think about that. I left them in the safest place I thought they could ever be. And so I went shopping because I didn't have to worry about them. That's what we're talking about. It's these little serendipitous moments that says to us, oh, we really didn't see that or really don't understand that. And it takes those kinds of moments that really reveals, as we're kind of saying, our own blind spots, our own biases begin to show up. And when we say that we're hospitable, are we? Are we really hospitable?
Well, there's the creature comforts, right? Is the food something that's familiar? Are we all exploring different kinds of foods? There's what's the sound like? What does prayer look like? There's those kind of creature comfort type things, or cultural comforts. But there's also some theological differences as well, and the expectations that we have for why we come together. Right. Is are we coming to worship so we can say, repeat again the creeds, repeat again, reaffirm what we already know to be true, and it's rooted kind of in the past. Historically, this is how we understand who God, the Godhead, is, and we celebrate the God of the past, but that God of the past really isn't speaking to what's happening right now, because we're expounding on scripture. Great, let's expound on scripture. We're talking historically. The hymns are historical, and I'm talking about right now. That's good. But there are people who are coming to church not for, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but not for a history lesson. Right. They're coming to church because we're hurting today.
Right.
They're coming to church because the world looks like it's going to hell in a handbasket right now.
They're coming to church because they had been thinking that racism, sexism, economic oppression wasn't really a real thing, and now it has landed on their front step. And they're looking for an answer, and they're looking for someone to stand up. And they're thinking maybe the church should stand up, right? So there's a difference in approach to what we're looking for. Who is God? Who is the God that you're looking for? It's the same God that we're identifying, but who is God to you? Hannah? Well,
kind of on the note of what are we looking for, I think this is another way in which white supremacy culture has really damaged our ability to be intercultural. Because I think a lot of, in my experience growing up in an intercultural church, I think a lot of white folks see church as this is my opportunity to kind of not just be entertained, but like, this is my one chance to connect with God this week. Before I go back into the world, because we don't integrate God and community together into our day-to-day life. Like, church is on Sunday, and this is where I get my dose of God this week. And then I go back into the world, and maybe I do devotions, or maybe I pray before I eat and pray before meals, but it's very separated from community. And that's, I think, a symptom of white supremacy culture that has made white people very protective of their comfort in spaces of church. And it's made it very hard for white people to give up that comfort, which is not a good thing. It means that we need, as, like, speaking as a white person, to be like, the purpose of church is not for me to sit in comfort, to be reconnect with God through the comfort that I'm used to and the mediums that I'm used to. The purpose of church is one day a week, a couple hours a week, to build community, but also to continue to do that throughout all of the other days of the week. And if I don't have that, I need to be seeking that, so that church isn't the place where I get it and I can sacrifice some comfort on those couple of hours to build intercultural community, because that's another space that I can do that. But if we're not doing that and church is the one space, then it becomes a lot harder for white people to sacrifice it. And that's a problem that white people have to fix. In order to build good intercultural churches and to be able to have those spaces, because it's a problem. We don't have that community outside of those hours on Sunday because we've prioritized whiteness over everything else.
Right.
I think for a lot of us who are white, we aren't often in spaces where our cultural rules aren't being adhered to at some level. So I think we're at very elementary levels of even understanding what intercultural actually means versus what it really is, because it's not part of our experience. And a lot of our world is set up to acquiesce to things that make us comfortable. Like, just the fact that you might be uncomfortable might be a very beginning entry point. And just to have tolerance for being uncomfortable, and that you don't try to change that right away.
Right. Yeah. Don't go for pain medicine.
We have this conversation at my house quite often about what utensils do we serve when we have people over. So we primarily will make Chinese food. And it's amazing how, like, the surface level things, like, will you take off your shoes when you come to the door and put on slippers, and will you use chopsticks? How people will, and they do not intend something harmful, right?
Right.
But say things like, well, I don't need those slippers, or I don't do that, or I need these in order to, you know, now maybe they do need, their shoes in order to walk comfortably, but I'm amazed at how many people have walking disorders that can only be corrected by shoe wearing in the house. That's just, like, it's amazing how that comes up right at the doorway. Or, like, I can't eat a meal if I don't have the utensil I'm used to. I think that there are worship parallels to this kind of behavior that I need to be accommodated to in order to do some very surface level entry into your culture. You know, forgetting that our dining table still exists in America. right? Even if our home is bicultural, right. like mm-hmm. where it's geographically mm-hmm. located, like you are comfortable all the way to our house.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yep. Yeah. I just see this as the church had, the early church had to deal with this. The early church had to deal with the exact same thing when mm-hmm. Christianity came on the scene. I mean, most of the apostles, they dealt with just Jews. And mm-hmm. it was mostly a Jewish Christianity. And then it started to shift to the Greeks. It started to shift to the Roman Empire and the Hellenistic Greek that showed up in culture. And so the church shifted. And so the church is, and now it's shifting even today to the global South and to Africa and to Asia. And so the book of Acts is the whole source document of what mm-hmm. intercultural churches ministry is all about. Jesus chose 12 guys who were very different. It's a cultural ministry. Jesus even started it. And so we have to understand that there's going to be some vulnerability that needs to happen. But one of the great things that helps an intercultural ministry is having time for storytelling. And, yes. and the Bible is full of storytelling of how the church moved through from being from Jewish Christianity to Hellenistic Christianity. And mm-hmm. and if we would spend time with that and have that interact with our own stories, that goes an awful long way.
Yeah. And I'm just going to add one thing real quick. And in inviting people to share their stories, who they are, not just the tragedy of their lives.
Right. Yeah.
But also the everydayness of their lives, right? I don't want to mm. only be asked to speak about how racism or how sexism mm. has mm. impacted my life, how hard it is, right? Mm. I also want to talk about, I'm learning how to, still learning how to parent 3 adult kids. How are you doing with that? Mm-hmm. I got a grandchild living mm-hmm. with me. How is that? How do you go in? What swimming mm-hmm. lessons do you know about, right? I want to talk about, we need to allow people to be holy people, whole people. And we need to not try to educate someone about their struggle, right? I don't need someone who isn't Black to try to tell me about the Black condition in the United States. Because sometimes, I've experienced that too. Not at my home church, other places where it's like, you're walking on thin ice, bud.
Somebody about to get hurt.
Just saying. I'm about to be the stereotype. Eric, save us.
Close us out. Well, we will let that be the last thing said. I'll just let everybody ponder that last little thought there. I feel like we could go for a long time. I would love to listen to more of your stories, Reggie. Maybe that'll have to be another episode. But listeners, thank you for listening to this episode of the Antioch Podcast. So it is our prayer that these conversations about biblical anti-racism inspire you to live countercultural lives marked by both justice and mercy while walking humbly with God and maybe with some hospitality. This was kind of a call to thinking more hospitably and what that actually means. So if you like this episode, don't forget to like and subscribe. And if you didn't like this episode, like and subscribe anyway, because probably means that there's something good to hear. So sometimes we have to hear things we don't like to hear. That's okay. We all live and grow. So until next time, keep the faith, keep fighting for justice. This has been the Antioch Podcast. See you later.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. You can help us by spreading the word about the Antioch Podcast, by praying for us, sharing this episode on your social media, writing us a review, or supporting us financially by clicking on the support link on our website, www.antiochpodcast.org. Music, editing, and production of the Antioch Podcast provided by Eric Nykamp. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your support.